This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's leading boutique wealth manager, trusted to guide families for over 20 years. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Man, I love the little bit of humor. We had such fun last night, laughing and thinking about the old times. And I think life would be so dreadful if we'd never learned how to smile and how to laugh as human beings. But you've been called Dr. Doom, the guy who never smiled, never laughed, the one who said, "Get your money out of South Africa." That's the way you've been portrayed. How would you portray yourself today?
I would call myself honest. I mean, I've always been honest. And when I started advising people, and you and I have had an experience that very few people have had. You've been to 19 Davos conferences. I've been as a journalist at the Star. I think I went to 4 or 5 World Bank IMF conferences all over the world, Bangkok, Washington, Sao Paulo. You get a view of the world, a view of South Africa, where it fits into the world in terms of the economy and politics and so on. So you come back another time and you realize that South Africa is actually a very, very small player. Then you listen to politicians like they're doing now, like Ramaphosa yesterday said, "We're going to withhold minerals from the rest of the world." That comes from P.W. Botha's. It was the same finger wagging. I mean, it's just bizarre. We don't understand how small we are in the greater things. And then, like you have been reading books, The Sovereign Individual, Rees-Mogg, it opened your eyes that you have to be able to take control of your destiny. And by externalizing your assets, first of all, under exchange controls, we actually became quite poor relative to the world. We missed a very big boom in the 80s and the 90s in Wall Street before the big crash. Now, again, we had the same situation. You know, we were getting poorer and poorer and poorer, and this numbers showed it, the rand exchange rate, the JSE versus the major indices, the price of your property. I spent hours and hours analyzing those facts, and then I talk to people and I say, like, and I hope my wife is listening, sell your property.
Okay. You got a bad look there.
Keep it. You know, I was just giving good advice. And everything I said was based on my analysis and facts. It's all I can deal with. So if I would say I'm just realistically honest about our situation. Has my view changed about South Africa? The northern parts of the country are falling apart, and that's not a statement. And most people in this audience know what I'm talking about. The railways, the municipalities, we spoke about it last night. I said the biggest collapse taking place is in all these scattered little municipalities. They all destroyed wealth at an enormous scale because each and every residential or commercial property in those little towns has become worthless. You cannot give it away, because nobody wants to buy it. You add up all those numbers around the country, we're talking trillions of rands that has disappeared as a result of the ANC's ineptitude. Come to the Cape, and a lot of people have been doing that. Wealth has been created by migration of people, business people. It's well governed. It's, you know, I'm just saying these are the facts. You cannot dispute that. I mean, prices in Hermanus are compared with many places in the world, and rightly so. You drive through Hermanus and it's fantastic. You go to the Paarl, you go to Franschhoek. When we drove through Franschhoek, it is, my goodness, beautiful. And I'm just talking about facts. That's what I'm doing.
We've got a brochure outside which talks about BizNews Premium, and obviously we want everybody to realize that that's the way BizNews is sustainable, by becoming members of Premium. I know most of the people in this audience are members of BizNews Premium, but on the back of it is a quote from Benjamin Franklin. And to paraphrase it, it says, "The best investment you can make is in knowledge."
Yes.
Now you've got a big business. You've got a lot of people who want your time. How do you manage that diversion? For me, it's easy. I just talk shit for a living. You are someone who has to go and sort out people's financial affairs. How do you actually discipline yourself to to read, and what do you read, and how much time do you do that? I've often wondered, because you're a mine of information at any point in time.
You know, it's apart from, you know, being very jealous with your time, you have to have discipline. You have to have certain times that you read. You have to have certain times that you speak to people. And there's different ways of communicating. If I may just refer to our company, we spend a lot of time having webinars with our clients. We had one last week. Sean Pache was a guest speaker. That's the way we communicate with our clients. And we have a fantastic communication program driven by my wife, Sue. Our clients get a newsletter written either by myself or by one of my senior advisors on a topic. I think we've got the best communication program of any wealth company. Because I was a journalist, I understand how important it is to communicate. In the old days, 30 years ago, when you invested money with Sanlam or Old Mutual, you gave them your money and you got a report once a year. You had no idea, no input in that. We've just changed that. And secondly, if I may, Alec, you know, we've created, I have handpicked, in my opinion, about 25 very, very smart young financial advisors. Most of them got become CFPs. I mean, they're extremely smart and they challenge you all the time. But we communicate with our clients on so many levels. We tell them about what's going on and they appreciate it. It's like a journey that you take with your clients. You can only do that with very, very high level of communication.
John Malden, is he still alive?
He's still alive. I get his newsletter, and I've been trying to get to his investment conference in May many, many times for the last couple of years, not possible, but he's still on my list. I sometimes send him messages.
Where is that investment conference?
It's in San Diego.
Texas?
Yeah.
California? Because he's from Texas, isn't he?
He was. He now lives in one of these tax havens just... But he is essentially from Texas. His kids live there. So we've had some good times. And in fact, John Malden gave a seminar for our clients in 2007. It was arranged by Pierre Duplessis. You might know Pierre. Him and Pierre are very good mates. And Pierre phoned me and he said, listen, I've got this American guy. Do you want to use him for a seminar? So he spun me this story. I said, yeah, let's listen to this guy. And I kid you not, my wife was present. He stood there, 27, it was November 2007. And he got up and he started speaking about the crash coming in America. And he started speaking about these highly toxic instruments. And we were all sitting there, gobsmacked. We had no idea what he was talking about. So John, I've always respected his foresight and knowledge. And he's the kind of guy I want to go listen to. And the range of speakers that he assembles like you. He gets some very, very heavy hitters on a global scale.
I remember when BizNews was very, very young, I mean, literally 1 year old, and we're now 12, John Malden and Andy Andrews, if you recall Andy Andrews, Gibbs Business School, they came into our little office. We had a little studio at the JSE at the time, this Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And it's still on. If you go onto BizNews Radio, you can put in John Malden and you'll hear. I'm pretty sure that they gave us some pretty good advice then as well. But really my question to you, Magnus, is who's the John Malden of today? Who's kind of the next generation person?
Wow, that's a difficult question. There are many out there. There are many. I tend to now focus.
Who do you read, I think?
You know, I read everything I can read. But I try and with your help, I've identified some very, very good fund managers that we use in our selection, and then I speak to them. And if I may, Sean is one of them. I've never heard of Sean before he came onto your program. I liked what I heard. I phoned him up. I said, can we talk? I liked what he told us, and we started using his fund with great success. Tony Bell, absolute critical thinker and totally different. I mean, I listened to guys like Pete Fillion Studio, I think it was a year ago, saying China, long time bull market. And look what China has done, 60%. This is what you get coming to business. You get guys telling you about Bitcoin. That went up. China went up. And so I always believe in the power of the collective mind. None of us here in this audience knows everything about the stock markets and investment markets. But collectively, there's a heck of a lot of knowledge floating around. And if you learn to tap into that, you can pick up such amazing nuggets of wisdom and go and apply it in your own home and your own investment strategy, whatever it might be. That's how you coming back to Benjamin Franklin, the more you know in markets, the more successful you are. Yeah. No question about it.
That's so beautiful, Magnus, because when I used to go to the Berkshire Hathaway AGM, thanks to Pitt and Corky for getting us, and Walter for actually getting South Africans interested in these two old bosses from Omaha, I remember them talking about people like Benjamin Franklin and Marcus Aurelius and Cicero. Now, where would an oak from Newcastle get to hear those names? And I tell you what, they've changed my life by reading that and that whole idea of compounding of knowledge, exactly what you've been doing. Just to get back, though, to that $1.3 trillion that you spoke about that's left the country, what would be required, and please don't say impossible, what would be required to bring it back? What could we, those of us who live here, do to make this a kind of country that the $1.3 trillion that's there, it comes back here because it's actually going to do better here and safer here than where it is now?
You know, if the investors, and it's interesting that you make, what makes it come back? I mean, the current year, the last year, the JSE has outperformed most world markets as a result of Naspers process and the gold mines. So that's nice. There is in the performance, but it's a very, very, very focused and couple of shares that have boosted the JSE. What would be that trigger? And I know Rob has been speaking about it and Pitt and everybody. You will have to have a total change in government approach to protection of property rights, protection of just about everything, and be pro-business. Stop bashing business at every turn. That the people say, why am I going to put more money? I'm going to get bashed by the ANC again. Will they bring their money back? I doubt it, but they will. While they're creating fresh money, that will be invested into the country. And we almost would have to have like a kind of Argentina experience that you absolutely put you break all the rules, all the regulations, the chainsaw effect, that was the word I was looking for. You'll have to start totally fresh and say, how can we become the capitalist country of Africa? And until that happens, the money will stay where it is.
Do you get any sense that it could happen? I mean, sure, we had Cyril making a fool of himself again in Zimbabwe. But outside of that, the ANC is now, by some polls, and we'll hear an update from France Courrier tomorrow morning, but is sitting at around 20%. So there's a wave of something that's happening here. We don't know if it's good or bad yet, and we'll only know in hindsight. But do you get any sense that realism is coming back into our country?
Not yet. If you approach it from that way, if you start counting the numbers, which party's got what, the danger is, first of all, I think we're going to permanently into the future have coalition governments. That's my first thing. I don't think there's going to be one party that dominated like the ANC did. Our danger is purely my observation. If the ANC forms a coalition with the MK and the EFF, and anything in politics is possible, that would be extremely negative. The other side is that the DA plus maybe a breakaway of the ANC and a coalition of the smaller parties, they form some kind of a power block. But I think our politics is going to remain messy for a very long time, whether the ANC is in or out. We need to change our thinking about the economy. What produces wealth? We spoke about it last night. We cannot sleep at night in our beds anywhere in the country with an unemployment rate of 35, maybe 40%. That is a tinderbox waiting to happen, and it can happen anytime. We need to get people into jobs.
There's an argument there for Gigi. Unfortunately, he's not with us now, but we will get him back in March where he does challenge that. But nevertheless, just to let you know, Magnus is open to questions. So please just type in your question on the WhatsApp group. Magnus, here's the first one is, if a South African invests money offshore, is that money taxed by SARS?
Yes, of course. It's treated like any investment. There are tax saving strategies, but eventually you'll be taxed on estate duty unless you put it into a trust day one But you are taxed on the same way. But there's a little tax savings. Most of the offshore funds we use are accumulation funds. So they roll up the dividends. So they can't pick up the dividends in South Africa. So that's a small little freebie. But it's part of your balance sheet. As I said, you will be taxed if you sell and move out. So the investment companies will send a statement saying you've sold and there's tax to be paid.
Yeah, but we know quite a few guys take a chance. You know, they don't. They say, "Well, do you want this price, or do you want to give me cash and not pay 14% or 15%?" So there's a bit of that. Do you take a chance? Can you take a chance with not disclosing?
Only at 20%, not 15%. That's not my price. No. We can't. It's out of our hands. If you're dealing with any, remember, South Africa was on the grey list, and the grey list has caused so much supervision. And looking for South African money, and they know about your money. Whether it's a bank, investment company, there is the, what do they call it, they exchange information, banks automatically or on request. So that is a dangerous path to tread. And of course, we cannot go, we tell our clients, don't try those games, because we don't want to be sucked into that. And effectively, we can't. It's done automatically.
But I just know human beings are saying, take a chance, someone's going to catch me. Basically, don't take a chance. That's what you're saying. Unless it's all digitized.
Unless you've got a very nice sofa and you can get a lot of dollars in there. But that's quite original advice, yes.
David Wallace. Patrick, just won't you please just put the person's name who's asking the question, because Patrick is our production editor and he's filtering them. He says, David Wallace wants to know, is there any talk of increasing the annual SDA and AIT limit? You got to explain to me what those two are, SDA and AIT.
The 1 million rand is called a single discretionary allowance. In other words, you can automatically take it offshore, no paperwork. Every year,
SDA, discretionary allowance.
Correct. And that's, to me, the starting block of any investment portfolio today. Get your money offshore. Why do I say that? In rand or in dollar terms, the actual dollar value has dropped from about $84,000. Currently, it's about $52,000. So your real purchasing power is declining all the time, and dramatically so. We spoke about my expensive dinner in London a couple of weeks ago. So that's your starting point, because it's the easiest. You simply just remit the money, off you go. 10 million rand is called the annual international transfer, something like that, some fancy name that came up. That's up to 10 million, and that goes through SARS clearance, and that's sometimes a bit sticky. They ask, where does it come from? Give us proof. Those are the two allowances. To answer your question, I hope they increase it, because in dollar-adjusted bad terms, it has actually declined by about 50%. So that's why you must use it when you can, because if you lose it in a year, you can't carry it over to the next year.
But no likelihood of them increasing it as we sit here today.
These things we never know. Treasury, SARS, they don't go and speculate. They just make the announcements, or they don't. It's probably a political decision made. Guys can take some more money offshore. The 1 million rand allowance today, if you have a daughter or a son studying in London, doesn't go far. After rent and costs and petrol, you're way over the million already. So it's shrinking all the time. That's why I'm telling people, if you're going to have kids going to study abroad, or maybe you're going to immigrate, that's the first investment you make. 1 million or 2 million per family. Get that off and start your investment portfolio going offshore, because it's always still a regulation. It can be revoked tomorrow morning. And until that, you ask me just now, what will make me be confident? If they simply just scrap foreign exchange control, and you can bring your money in, bring it out without Reserve Bank sitting there writing you letters, which is happening to, it happened to my daughter. They wrote to her and said, you over your limit. He's 21 years. You got the fight of her life. You over your 1 million. Because there are reams of people with computers tracking all your expenses, your Netflix subscription and your Amazon orders. It all comes off your 1 million rand allowance. But most people don't know it.
Even your business subscription comes off the 1 million rand allowance. So just remember that too. Okay. Rob Hersoff's got a question for you, Magnus. Hey, who's pinging you? Are we going to boo somebody? If you had to commit capital to South Africa, where would you invest? Which sectors? In the public market and in private equity? If you had to. So you had blocked rand, whatever. Where would you be putting the money?
Well, it depends what kind of business it is. I think agriculture is quite an interesting one. And for many years, it's actually been doing very well. The other one would probably be tourism. I think with the rand, and we are so cheap. And Western Cape tourism, you'd probably be looking at building a new airport in the Winelands. That's where I would be looking at tourism. And I've been saying this for a long time.
Are you a shareholder?
I could be. Now, that's where I would be looking. And I mean, if you look at our farming, our farmers, despite everything that's against them, they are still producing, they're still feeding us, and you get some very, very smart players in that space. So that's where I probably would look at something that it's a localized industry. We're not competing with the rest of the world here. That's what I'll be looking at probably.
And as far as property is concerned?
Property, well, for 10 years I've been saying buy in the Western Cape, Bolderwee, Franschhoek, Hermanus, and you know, it's now all becoming true because the move of people with money from the north to the south to the Cape has been enormous. I mean, that's the derde groot trek kind of stuff. It's quite astonishing. It was just by chance that I came across Bolderwee. But I saw something yesterday. The prices have trebled in 5 years in Bolderwee. And it's not only South Africans. There's about 30% foreigners who come here and they look at the lifestyle and they say, I want to be here for 6-7 months of the year when it's lousy weather in Europe. And they're buying these 50 to 100 million rand properties as if it's candy. And so the Western Cape, for instance, the Paarl, I know of 17 developments in the pipeline in and around Paarl, plus AfriForum, Solidariteit, building a new Afrikaans university. They're opening up a temporary campus next year. There'll be, I think, 10,000 pupils in 5 years. Now, think of what that will do to the town and the purchasing power of that town. It's a second Stellenbosch. So I've been telling people for free, go and buy in the Paarl. That, to me, is quite an incredible town. We have two high schools playing rugby, and there's 30,000 mad, besotted parents, grandparents sitting on those stands. It's like nothing else in South Africa or in the world, in my opinion.
Amazing. Well, it also shows you what the potential is for the rest of the country, because if foreigners are quite happy to invest due to the lifestyle and the climate, if we could get the rest of the country right, whew, it would open the
We can
taps.
Just get corruption. I mean, this guy was shot a week ago. He was actually shot in my old boardroom. They bought that building from me in Saxonwold. And this, I mean, the guys are getting taken out. And I see for the first time now, and I must comment about Hendrik de Toey now actually saying, guys, this must now stop. And I would like the old Mitchells and the Salams and the Alan Grays to also say collectively, say, guys, we provide massive amounts of taxation for the government. This is affecting everybody's wealth. It's time to stop. So I'm very pleased Hendrik has eventually got up and said what he said.
Rob, you don't feel too as lonely as you were earlier or last week, eh? Hendrik's joined the team. And I think, as Magnus says, it's about time that you had lots of others doing it as well. Jacques Poupard's question is there donations tax on SDA paid into an offshore trust in excess of the annual donations limit, 100K per annum?
If you just simply transfer it, there is two or three ways to get your money into the trust. First of all, there is a donations tax. If you want to pay it up front and get and be done with it, that's not the smart way to do it. You actually lend the money to the trust. You do it on a loan basis, and the cost of the loan can be capitalized in South Africa, and you pay it with rands. That's probably the correct strategy. Our tax guys have said to me that's the best way to do it. But there are guys who say, take it out in a trust, pay the 20%, and then it's free from South Africa forever and a day.
Magnus, I tell you what, we can't start this personal finance or restart our personal finance chat, weekly chat, soon enough, because I'm seeing all the questions that are coming through here are personal finance related. There's a hunger for information that you have just forgotten about. And
it's become so complex. Mm. And, you know, there's so many answers now. It's become extremely complex, but it's extremely important that we know how to answer and assist people in making the right choices.
So Warren Wheatley wants to know, there's a bit of a vested interest here. How did Magnus's Bitcoin course go? He had said that he registered at the March conference.
Yes, I did. I mean, buying a membership to the gym doesn't mean you go to the gym.
You're going to have to catch him afterwards, Warren.
I actually like one-on-one, so can I get someone to do a one-on-one? I admit, I confess, he enrolled and I just got so busy. So the answer is no.
You mean no what? No, you didn't go, or no?
Take your pick.
Keith Wetmore's question is for Magnus. Is the offshore allowance only for individuals? What about trusts or companies?
Very good question. Government, very quiet. As I said, they don't make announcements and PR statements. A couple of months, they quietly announced you can swap your money in a trust in South Africa with offshore assets in another trust. It's quite intriguing. We just been doing some research on that. And let's say you've got 100 million in a trust here. You can create a trust offshore, get Reserve Bank approval to move that 100 million into that trust. But obviously, SARS knows exactly where it is. I mean, so yes, it is now possible, which is quite interesting because there's a mountain of money locked up in trusts in South Africa that did not qualify for the SDA or the AIT. So it can be done.
What's your view on Cape Independence from Talal Salim? He says, and if it were to happen, what is your view on the potential for investments into the Western Cape?
I thought it was already independent. Why? What happened? That's politics. I'm not going there. You know, intrinsically, you want to say, yes, we want to be independent. But I think much as I would like to see it being independent, I would like to see more power devolved to the administration here with more power. But I don't think it's ever going to happen.
I've got the best job in the world. I mean, I know you used to have the best job in the world. Then you went off to go and do financial advising and stuff. I stayed, and I still have the best job in the world. So this week, I talked to a guy called J.P. Smith. You've heard of J.P. Smith. Yeah. He's with the city of Cape Town. He's a city councillor. Usually, these politicians, they become councillors, and then they go off, and they become parliamentarians, MPs. Then they get blue light brigades. Then they do coalitions and become ministers. Then they get into Donald Trump's office. That's kind of the progression. Not for J.P. Smith. What J.P. Smith does is he stayed in Cape Town. So he is still working on the safety and security cluster there. And he was explaining to me in quite a lot of detail what they're doing. Now, if you recall, in 2019, after Jordan Hill Lewis won the mayor, well, he was kind of a bit of a shoo-in, but he became the next mayor of Cape Town. Just after he became mayor, he said there was a tiny crack in the door that he was going to kick the door to pieces so that there would never be load shedding in Cape Town ever again. He was going to, because remember, up to that point,
yeah,
Eskom said, we decide whether you can have power or not. And he said they were going to kick in the door. J.P. Smith is saying that Cape Town's doing exactly the same thing on crime. They've added another 750 policemen on Wednesday this week. Local policemen, in other words, Metro Police. And they're basically looking at taking power, not waiting for it. It's almost, I suppose, they're going to court, they're doing it legally. But isn't that interesting that you're seeing this devolution of power, not by stealth, but by force?
It's fantastic to hear that because something needs to be done about the crime in the Cape Flats. It's just horrendous when you tell foreigners, you know, when they ask about the crime and they hear that 300 people have been shot in Cape Flats in the last month. I said, is that possible? It's higher than the Ukraine war. I mean, it's in the Cape Flats. So it's fantastic to hear.
He did also say that a lot of that was inter-gang related. You know, they kill each other.
Still 300 people.
Still 300 people, for sure. I asked him about it, because I clearly, you know, sometimes we've got to be careful with the headlines. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
Unemployment at 35%. Hey, people aren't starving here like they were in America during the Great Depression. There's a lot going on. The guys have got side hustles, but let's not worry about that too much. Here's a question from Ian Mack. He says, are the big tech value companies now overvalued?
No, I just don't think so. I mean, we've been hearing about this. In fact, if you go back in time, the same headline I've read 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, these companies are creating enormous wealth. They're creating enormous amounts of profit year after year, quarter after quarter. They have not disappointed yet. There's always a chance that they might disappoint. If you prepare to hang on, you've had a great ride with your tech stocks, hang on to it. Look at those long-term historical returns. If you look at the Invesco QQQ, I mean, for the last 15 years, it's been giving you 21, 22% in dollars per year. Why do you want to try and be smart and time it and let the market do its work? Let the fund manager do his work. But I don't think it's overvalued. I don't think we realize how big AI is going to be. I mean, some people say it's 20 times bigger than the internet.
But some of those fund managers are saying it's going to crash, it's going to crash, it's going to crash. I've heard that for over a decade now.
That's the market. I mean, you and I know as well as I do that in any group of fund managers, half the guys will say it's going to crash, half the guys are going to go up. And over time, the power of the guy who's been positive and ignored all these doomsday warnings. I mean, I go back 30, 40 years. I've got books in my cupboard there that predicted the end of America, the end of the dollar. It's all, well, not all. There is so much rubbish out there. Jeremy Grantham, 4 years ago, he said, the everything bubble. Go back in time, Google it, 4 years. He's 50% out. Markets have doubled since then. And he's chupstall. If you had to react to every guy who says the markets are going to crash, the markets are going to crash, you should not be in the stock markets. You should put your money in the bank. End of story. Because you're going to go crazy.
I like that, Magnus. It's surely when you're investing, you got to understand what it is that you're investing in.
Well, what if you educate your A client? You get a new client who wants to go offshore. You show to him, you say to him, sir, it is going to drop 20% once every 7 years. It is going to drop 30% once in every 20 years. It is going to drop 5% every 2 to 3 years. If you can't live with that volatility, I'm not going to invest you in that product. It's almost have to get him to sign a document because they forget about that. And once you understand that, then you show them when is the best time to invest in global stock markets. After that crash. It's the best time to get into markets. It's part of the educational process.
Another one from Rob. Rob Hersoff, question for Magnus. What is the best way to invest in AI? My bet is that AI will disrupt the big seven. So I want to make my AI bet not dependent on investing in the Magnificent Seven.
I don't have an answer to that. You know, AI, you got to understand that I follow what I can about AI. I read the company reports. I read what other people say about it. And there's still a gap there in my knowledge. And so far, it's worked for me. My Magnificent Seven stuff has done phenomenally well. I don't have enough knowledge to make a call. And there are some very smart people who analyze these stuff. And I look at the momentum in the markets. I look at the trends. And so far, the trends are okay, but it can change tomorrow. But I'm happy with it. I'm cool with it.
Rob, I had to say one word. Palantir bought at 850. It's now 160. And that's an AI play. Flat out AI, practical AI play. And that's what I learned when I met all these people who say, don't go to divorce because it's a, you know, world domination, blah, blah. If you've got Palantir shares as a result of what we said at BizNews, you thank Davos, because that was where I met Alex Karp. And I would never have known who Alex Karp was if it wasn't for the World Economic Forum. So there's one for poor old Klaus who's gone now. John Endres, another one of our presenters over the next couple of days, he says, will over-indebted governments try to inflate their debt away? What inflation-resistant asset classes are interesting to you?
Gold is the answer. I mean, gold is, it's been the classic, and that's exactly what's happening. If you look at, and one of your members of the tribe, David Melville, I don't know if he's here, he's been doing a hell of a lot of work trying to get guys to buy into gold, and well done, Dave. So gold is looking interesting. Central banks in the world are now buying more gold than treasuries, U.S. treasuries. Gold price itself, by the way, yesterday, and this just shows how the markets sometimes work, about 3 to 4 years ago, Old Mutual wanted to close its gold fund. And there was a lot of resistance from a bunch of old toppies. And eventually,
and David Melville.
Yes. They got the fund to stay open. Guess what was the return of the Old Mutual Gold Fund in the last year in dollar terms? 100%. 100%. So remember, sometimes investment companies will sell you what they want you to buy, not what you want to buy. And so I'm glad Old Mutual backed up and kept it going. It gave 100% dollar returns. For some of our clients who like gold, I mean, they are smiling. That's an unbelievable return. It's 100% in 1 year. Dit moet gedoen word, as Neil de Beer would say.
A question from Raul Miller. There has been a growing value bias towards U.S. markets. For purposes of geographic rationalization, where should we look next?
I would look at Japan. I've been saying this for 3 years. Japan has been one of my personal, because I went to Japan, we met at a meeting with some fund managers and the Reserve Bank of Japan in Tokyo. And I came back again to South Africa and I tried to read up about Japan in the local media. There's nothing. Not a fund, not a commentator. Precient's got one guy who looks at, no, he looks at China. Sorry, they all look the same, don't they? I then went out and I found a fund, Orbis Global Equity. There's your advice for free, ladies and gentlemen. It has returned over 15 years, 21, 22% in dollar terms. It's been a straight line, 20% per year. The Japan is very interesting to me. China, I'm starting to spend a lot of more time reading up about China and the ways we can get into China and maybe Korea, South Korea. But my number one non-US portfolio, I will be looking at Japan, China, maybe Korea or something like that.
It was so interesting yesterday in the Mining Web Weekly. So we've got a conversation that I have with Pete Major, who is in the US at the moment. Otherwise, he would also have been here today or tomorrow. And he said that when he had a look to particular stocks, the one extremely well managed, the other one very badly managed. And he said that over a 25-year period, they've pretty much performed the same way. When Magnus was talking now about Japan, you think, gee, they've just fired their prime minister. They're in political turmoil. But that really, to use the Major theory, doesn't really matter, because in the long term, it's the underlying value that comes through. Last question from Talal Salem. Where do you think gold is going and how do you invest? Do you invest in gold or Bitcoin? Remember that the Bitcoin guys at Tether are investing in gold because they call it natural Bitcoin.
I buy my gold through either a gold fund, Old Mutual in South Africa, 91 gold fund in offshore, or I can buy a gold ETF on one of the offshore platforms. What was the other part of your question? I can't remember.
Bitcoin?
We're out of time. We're
Bitcoin?
Out of time.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth. Building wealth and protecting legacy since 2004. Invest better with Brenthurst.